Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, June 17th, 2018. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 293. I have a super special return guest, Morgan Campbell of the Toronto Star, sports writer, smart guy, all around cool dude, Canadian, everything. Dual citizenship, I think, too. Yes, I believe so. And I don't have his social security number. He's a great guy, and he's back on the show. I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I just want to wish Happy Father's Day to everybody who is a father or a father figure. You are appreciated. You should get the big piece of chicken today. I hope you don't have to. Hope your kids cut the grass. Whatever, you know. Just Happy Father's Day. I have not called my dad yet because it's early. I'm recording this pretty. He's probably up by now. So after I record this intro, I'll call him. And I sent him a card. I sent him a gift. Yeah. So yeah, I acknowledged him. You know. I mean, you're supposed to acknowledge your parents. You know, I know it's hard because sometimes parents do things and you're just like, gosh darn it, this guy, this woman. But for the most part, I've been, the only thing that parents do now, if you've had if you had decent parents that you love, the only thing now that's a little annoying is just being their tech support. And it's hard to be their tech support when you don't live near them. It would be one thing if it's just like, if I lived near them, I'll just come over and fix the shit. But one thing, my cousin, who's a great dude, he can do all that shit for them. Sometimes I can just buy them stuff and say, this is a thing, and you figure that shit out. But they're lucky to have my cousin around who can do shit like that. But when they call you and it's like, I have to see your phone to do it, you know, like I have to physically touch. I'm not that talented where it comes like you can press this and go to this thing. And I'm very tactile with it. But you know what I'm saying? That's the only, if you had a decent childhood and your parents are nice to you, whoever those people are, you know, just, you know, appreciate those people, man. And it's Father's Day. I know sometimes Father's Day gets glazed over. This is one of the might be one of the hardest days of of the fake holidays. But I hope if you're in pain and all that, you can get through it with people that your loved ones and the people that love you. All right. So what else do I want to? I blabbed enough about stuff on the Patreon episode, but I will say I've got shows coming up. I've got some shows at the Borgata in Atlantic City, New Jersey from June 24th through the 27th at the Music Box Theater. So if you're interested in that, get tickets for that stuff. If you are in way upstate New York, if you are based, it's not even upstate, it's just New York State. If you are near Syracuse or Rochester or like Buffalo, come to see me at the Waterloo Casino at Del Lago Casino in Waterloo, New York. I'm there July 28th. That's going to be fun. I'm around the city. I'll be around. I usually tweet where I'm going to be. And I had a fun show last night at the Bomb Shelter Comedy Show. Last night, hadn't done a bar show in a while, and it was good. It's good. They were giving out free pizza, and there were a shit ton of people in the room. So I gave them a good set. I had a good time. What else? If you are gonna be, you know, maybe a lot of people are probably gonna go on from out of town on this one. September 20th. Hold on. We're going to get this. September 20th, Thursday, September 20th, I'm going to be the MC of the Black Guy Who Tips live show in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center, 7 p.m. I'm hosting the event. I'm going to start off the festivities, and Rod and Karen are going to do their thing. Their first ever live show is going to be a big event. All the VIP tickets, I believe, are sold out, but there's still Gen Pop Peasantry tickets available for the plebeians. no, but there's still tickets available, so sell that shit out, man. Show that man and that woman that y'all love them. You know what I'm saying, young? I'm going to be there. It's going to be fun. Maybe I'll get to go to Publix for the first time. I don't know. Maybe we'll see. If I have time. If we have time. We'll see what happens. What happened? I had some auditions this week. I did comedy. I beat Detroit Become Human. It's a good game. Despite the think pieces, I had fun. I enjoyed it. Gonna dig my heels into God of War. The people say it's the greatest game ever, and people are saying it's better than The Last of Us, and I'm like, bullshit. It's a good game, but I don't know, you guys. All right, just let shit breathe a little bit. The game just came out a couple months ago, and now it's the greatest. And I nerd so the. Super excited about what I saw. E3, the only thing I really gave a shit about was The Last of Us Part 2, and I'm blown away by it. I'm super excited, and like the new Spider-Man, like obviously I'm assuming The Last of Us Part 2 doesn't come out until 2019. So all you need to tell me, like, Spider-Man, I will probably get it. Tomb Raider, all you need to do is tell me that a new Tomb Raider's coming out, and their track record for the last two have been good. So, and I looked at some of the gameplay, and it looks good. It's like, it's a better version of what they did the couple years before. So I'm down for that. And some of these other games will probably be like that game Anthem looks good. Where it kind of seems like it's Halo, but it's not. But you're in these exo suits and you fly around, and it's like an RPG. I could probably get into that. I'm sure I could. That looks fun. New Jay-Z and Beyonce is out. They randomly came out and shitted on Nas's album. Nas actually is pretty good. I feel like Kanye did a better job of putting the effort into other people's shit than he did with his own. But I have to go back, and I'll go back and listen to Kanye. I just feel inundated with all this new music that's coming out, but I'm trying to keep up. I'm checking out you guys, you young people, and the music that you guys are putting out. I'm getting into it. I'm getting into a little bit of Georgia Smith, a little bit of her acronym girl. I like her, you know, huh? Yeah, I bet you didn't know that I knew about those artists that came out last year. Georgia Smith came, her album's like new, I think. And she did a Tiny Desk. So that was cool. Yeah. So this is going to be a short intro because I blabbed a lot about shit over on the Patreon side. Get into the Patreon. It's cool, you guys. All right. Jeez. I'm not going to. It's good. It's good stuff over there. Support the show. You know, it's $3 a month. I saw one guy from high school. He just took away his patronage. And I think he only just like kind of joined the show. He probably only listens to the show when Fonte's on. And I love Fonte. Who doesn't love Fonte? But Jesus Christ, you know, like there's a lot of other cool people that are on the show. And then he just took away. But then after he quit my Patreon, there were two other people that joined. And and that warmed my heart. It made me feel good. It made me feel good. But I don't think you don't have to. Even if you're just like, you just say, Chris, I like you, buddy. Here's a buck. I think you can just pay a buck a month if you wanted to support the show. But to the 12 or 13 of you that are supporting the Patreon page, I really appreciate it. You guys are paying for the expense to do the show. And that's fucking awesome. So I appreciate you guys. The rest of you other 300 to 400 people that listen, you know, I like you guys too. You know, it's fine, and I appreciate it. I'm doing this. You know what? I appreciate everybody that listens to this thing. That's enough of me blabbing. Let's just get to Morgan. Morgan is great. I love talking to this guy. I love, there's a moment in the show where it's just like, and I even said it while we were doing it, I was like, I love talking to smart people. And he's one of those dudes. And I got to get him back on to talk about, I want to get him back on to talk about black hockey players. Because he did give me an assignment about a year ago, maybe, where I think the last time he was on, I think he might have been on late 20s. I don't even remember the last time he was on, but it might have been late 2017. And he was telling me about this movie called Soul on Ice. And it just so happened, because it was on Amazon, but you had to pay for it. And now it was on, I think it was on like Stars or something. Whatever it was, I have it on my DVR and I'm going to watch it. And then I kind of want to just talk to him about that. So maybe we'll do that in the future. And Morgan, I'm basically asking you in the intro of your episode. But I just I initially wanted to have Morgan on just kind of talk about football. And then it just kind of became some other stuff. And it was fun as always. It just pleasantly became some other stuff. We talked about a lot of other shit that like we often do whenever we chat. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the very amazing Morgan Campbell. There was this diner that I've been following on Instagram for about a year or two. And I used to go upstate a lot, like within 2 years ago, I was going up there sporadically, and I think I may try to go. It's like, it's in the Catskills. It's this place called the Phoenician Diner. Like, small town America is really attractive to me, but I don't know that I'm always safe there. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to be like, oh Lord, nah, I don't know if I can be safe in here, but it's just kind of like, it's beautiful, but it's like, I still have trepidation, you know what I mean, when it comes to that stuff.
Well, how many black folks live in Waterloo, New York?
Well, I don't know how many live in Waterloo. Like I said, I think it's just that it's just like, it reminds me, because when you know, when you travel, like I was telling my parents this, when you travel around the country, at least in America, everywhere's just like, like the country, like, cause I define the country as like North Carolina and Virginia, like the rural area. And I was like, oh, this place, you know, 4 hours from where I live in the city and whatnot, looks like North Carolina. Like when I'm up there, it just looks like North Carolina. And
yep.
Rural, it's the same. And when I went to that casino, it was a little bit of everybody. I mean, it's some sprinkles of us, but it was the black woman that told me, you know, this is where everybody goes because there's nothing really in Rochester.
Yeah, I feel like you've talked about this woman before, no?
I think you and I talked about this.
I feel like you mentioned her.
Yeah, because she was the woman. She was the woman that had the really good-looking daughter, and she and she was telling me, that she's telling me that those wings were overrated.
Yes. Yeah, now I remember.
Anchor Bar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hold on, because we can do the math on the number of black people in Waterloo. Because I got the Waterloo Wiki page up.
Oh, shit. All right. See, I like talking to smart people.
Okay, so it's 5,171 people as of 2010 in Waterloo.
Okay.
1.1% of them were black. So you're going to get in the neighborhood of 54 black people. But let's see. Let's do the math.
Yeah.
5,171 times 0.011, that'll give me 1.1%, equals, yeah, they have 57 black people.
Wow.
As of, 2010. The good thing is, like, if one family moves in, that could really boost the percentage. But if one family moves away, you suddenly have 10% fewer black people, right?
Yeah, it's not surprising at all. But when you really crunch those numbers like you just did, it's just like, oh, you, wow, yeah, that's about right.
But they have a casino there.
Yeah, so they just put a casino there. This will be. It's got to be a little. It's got to be a year. It's only a year old.
They have boxing at the casino yet?
I don't think so. I feel like you and I were talking about casinos the last time. You mentioned Boys to Men, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
You
want
to see me drive to a casino? You pretty good fight there.
Yeah.
And I would drive around Lake Ontario, whichever kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
To get to the fight.
I remember the food being good there, though. I was impressed by the food.
Okay, that helps.
Del Lago Casino. I'm doing the Borgata in a couple weeks, so that should be fun.
Hold on, Grandmaster Flash is playing there this weekend.
Oh, at Del Lago.
Yeah, okay. Lee Greenwood, a Kiss tribute band. What night are you there?
I'm there on July 30th.
So you're down at the bottom.
July 28th.
The Legendary Temptations, which I think are different from the regular Temptations.
Aren't they all dead?
I think all the originals are dead, but then there are still some guys that are like old enough to have sang with the originals. Okay. So like my mom, she's a big Ollie Woodson fan, the Screecher.
Uh-huh.
So remember Treat Her Like a Lady, the guy sang lead on that song.
All right.
And like he could screech with like the best of them. So my mom's a big Ollie Woodson fan. So if he's still playing, you get my mom out to that concert for sure.
Yeah, they got like a nice. It's really nice. It's kind of weird because they had me staying at the Howard Johnson when I was there.
Okay,
which is like a couple miles away, which was nice. I didn't have to pay for the room, and it was a nice. Yep. It was a nice hotel, but. I was talking to another. Maybe they were sold out because I was talking to another comic. He was like, "Yeah, I stayed at the casino. It was really nice."
Nancy Wilson of Heart is playing there. She has a black person in her band. Two black people. Sorry, a guy and a girl.
Yeah,
but I just saw the girl first. This is, you know, this isn't bad. This is. Listen, eventually, like they're going to get to the point where they're going to book people that can get people to drive from Toronto.
Yeah.
To this casino.
Well, what do you guys, I mean, Toronto's a major city, so is it just that people just want to kind of get out of Toronto and just cross the border?
There's that. And there's also just like the people that play at casinos, right?
Yeah.
So like where I live, they're getting ready to build a casino. And this is very controversial.
Okay.
Because I live in Durham region now, which is, I've been here about 7-8 months. It's just east of Toronto. So there's 4 cities here in Durham. So when you grow up in the city or in one of the other suburbs, you think of Durham region as all one place.
Mm-hmm.
But each of the cities has a distinct idea. You don't learn that till you move here.
Okay.
And they all have like this Springfield Shelbyville type relationship and rivalry, right?
Mm.
So the city I live in has like a quarter horse track and slots and a little casino.
Yeah.
The city next door to our east has a little casino, and now the city to our west wants to build like a real casino, like a big one. And so now the other cities are like, no, don't take our gambling. We need the gambling. But like,
yeah.
Listen, normally I would be against another casino, but If the casino means that, like, you know, the Johnny Gills of the world are going to be playing five minutes from my house,
yeah,
I'm all in.
See, that's the thing that would attract me, the shows, because I think the first time I went to a casino, I don't know if we talked about this before, but it was 2002 when Alicia Keys was first out. And
okay.
And she played the Trump Taj Mahal.
Okay.
And my dad and I went. My dad, he didn't buy a ticket, but it was like a graduation present because yep. I was obsessed with Alicia Keys. And so he stood on the outside of the room, basically, and people thought he was an undercover cop. So he still got to watch the show. And I was sitting, I had pretty good seats because I was sitting near Rodney Jerkins.
Yes.
You know who Rodney Jerkins is, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
And so I remember him being the most famous person there, I think. And what weirded me out about that, what annoyed me, because this was the first time, I would say, maybe it was like early in my concert-going career, but it was weird to me that people were getting up and walking around during the show, because it's like, yo, this is Alicia Keys. He's on stage. We paid $80 to $100 to see Jeez. Her. Why are you guys like, you know, walking around like a goddess isn't on stage right now?
Right.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all. And people kind of, they still kind of do that now when I go to shows, but there's no like reverence anymore. But that was the first time I really went to one, and I hadn't been back to Atlantic City since. I was going to go see Chris Rock when he was running his hour for the Netflix, the thing that's on Netflix now, Tambourine. Uh-huh. But yeah, man, it would have to be a show that would get me to go. And now that I'm performing, right. You know, I'll perform there, but, yeah, it's kind of weird.
Now, how often do you perform in Atlantic City?
This will be the first time. This will be the first time. Like, this is they just got new bookers, and the bookers have booked me in like other clubs and stuff before. So this is like their first season of booking. And,
okay.
And so it looks like it's going to be really fun. It's like 4 nights. Then I'm going to be down there, and it should be a good time. But
that's not bad.
Yeah, I'm actually excited because it's like I get to kind of just take some days off and just really like work on my set. I get to do about 20 minutes a night, and in front of like a shit ton of people. So we'll see how that goes, and it'll be, I guess it's just gen pop, general public of people that are upset that they lost a lot of money. So
how does that go over in casinos when you know that a bunch of the people in there, as you said, are there and not happy because they just lost the kid's inheritance at the crack table?
I don't, man. So I've only done it once. So my time at the Del Lago Casino was the first time that I did it, and that room is massive. There are about 800. I think this is a 2,400 seater at Del Lago, and And it was just, people were walking in because I was the opening act. I think I did like 25 to 30 minutes. And I did my set and I was like, okay, I guess this, it went okay. Like, it was fine. And then I got off and then I went to the buffet to eat dinner because they give you a voucher.
And there we go.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't be mad at that.
And, dude, I don't mean to go perform at a casino. Voucher.
Yeah, man. You get that voucher and then people were like, oh, you were funny. And they left before the headliner finished. And so people were in line and by the time that I was sitting down eating, people were coming up to me saying that they liked my set. But it just kind of felt weird just being like while I was up there, it felt weird because the laughs were coming in different pockets and people were still kind of screwing around. And by the time I was done, there were like hundreds of people there. But but it's interesting. But yeah, I'm the same way. But enough about that. What is the climate like in Toronto post the Pusha T Drake beef?
Oh man, where do you want me to start? Because it's been a rough couple of months for Toronto. When you think about the timeline, right?
Okay.
Because what we saw in April and early May were the Raptors and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I covered that series.
Okay.
And there was a lot of optimism around this series because Toronto, even though it's a big city, one of, you know, probably the top five or six media markets on this continent,
sure,
still has this really annoying inferiority complex. And this need to be acknowledged by Americans, not so much by the rest of Canada, because then the rest of Canada feels about Toronto the way Toronto feels about the U.S. Like, hey, pay attention to us. We're important, too. Mm-hmm. And sorry, somebody's tweeting at me, but they can wait. hear those alerts. So here's Toronto, and Toronto's got this really annoying inferiority complex. And the thing about Toronto, too, with the Raptors now, like, they built this into the marketing of the team all season, this idea that Americans don't respect the Raptors, they don't give the Raptors the respect that the Raptors deserve, that the Raptors have earned, and that Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan have earned. They deserve the same level of respect as LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, all these guys. They deserve the same level of respect as the Cleveland Cavaliers, Golden State Warriors, all these other, playoff contending teams. Cool. So what happens is Toronto, they beat Washington in the first round and they're waiting for Cleveland. Cleveland goes seven games with Indiana. And that was the game. After the game, LeBron James was like, I'm exhausted. I don't even want to think about Toronto. I just want to go home and sleep. Now, this is your opportunity if you're Toronto, because you got LeBron James starting to feel Kyle Korver's age. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you got and Cleveland, like, these guys from LeBron James, they're not good, or if they are good, they're not good every night with LeBron James. So these guys come dragging in all these old guys, most of them aren't that good, and then LeBron James, who has said, hey, I feel really exhausted right now, here's your chance to get a 1-0 series lead because you're well rested. And what does Toronto do? They lose that first game and they wind up getting swept. And in the midst of this series, Drake gets into this argument with Kendrick Perkins. And the thing about Drake, right? He's talking a big game. He's like, I'm here in real life. Well, Drake knows he can't fight Kendrick Perkins. He knows. No one's ever going to let him fight Kendrick Perkins.
Right.
But he talks a great game. And the other thing that people forget about Drake, right, is that he's an actor. My cousin put it to me that way. He's like, he's an actor playing a rapper, wow. And which is what winds up happening later in the spring, right? Because it's all fun and games until someone takes it really seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so Drake and Pusha T get into this thing. And the brilliance to me of Infrared is that Infrared is a much better song than Adidon. But you listen to Infrared, then listen to Duffy, then listen to Adidon, then go back and listen to Infrared. And Infrared sounds even better because you see all the stuff he was foreshadowing. You see how he set this track.
Yeah.
Trap for Drake. So the other thing that happens now, because Drake makes his freestyle called Duppy. And so everyone thinks it's cool, but at the same time, there's a lot of backlash to Drake. appropriates and interpolates a lot of Jamaican slang.
Yeah.
People say, well, Drake, why are you trying to be Jamaican? Because Drake, you know, his dad is African-American. It's like my family's African-American. You know, and his mom is white from Canada. But the thing people forget about Drake and the thing people forget about Toronto in general, right, is that Caribbean Canadians and Jamaicans in particular, because that's the largest group, like first-generation Jamaican Canadians, numerous here. And these are the guys that are, like, influencing slang. So when you see people talk about Toronto slang, what they are really talking about is slang that came from black people in Toronto, and usually those black people are guys who are first generation from the Caribbean. So that's why that Caribbean slang or the local slang is very heavily Caribbean flavored. So what people call Drake's struggle patois, is this really Drake talking like how people talk here? And my, like my wife, she grew up here. Her folks are from St. Lucia. You know, she always asks me why I don't talk like that. I'm like, because I don't. Like, because the thing about me is, like, yeah, I'm an African-American in Canada, and I've never tried to be a Caribbean-Canadian. And so it's never, like, I'll talk like that just, like, to joke around. Yo, man, them come.
Sure. Yo,
man, them come. Do the thing still. All this stuff, right? But, like, I don't talk like that.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas Drake will actually go talk like that to people. You'll have conversations. Drake is a master code switcher, right? When Drake's talking to white people, Drake talks just like white people. When he's talking to the Mandem, he talks like the Mandem. And then when he's talking to, like, you know, Lil Wayne and the rest of them, he talks like an American black, or he raps like an American black guy. And he raps with an accent and a dialect that he doesn't really use in everyday speech. Mm-hmm. And so here in Toronto, what's the last rap beef we remember with Drake is Meek Mill.
Yes.
Drake just goes back to back on Meek Mill, and everyone's happy. It's Toronto, one more win for Toronto over Philadelphia, you know, just like the 93 World Series. payback for the Vince Carter game when he missed that shot in 2001. Perfect. Cool. Yeah. But what people didn't realize, right, because Pusha T has a level of fame, but he's not mainstream famous.
Right.
And a lot of these people up here that listen to Drake, they're very much like Manny Pacquiao fans, right? Mm-hmm. They may or may not be hip-hop fans, but they're Drake fans. So as far as they know, Drake is the greatest rapper ever because he's really the one they listen to, right? And so just like the Pacquiao fans, like, no one can be better than Pacquiao. Like, how do you know? You don't watch boxing. You only watch Pacquiao fights and he wins. So all kinds of people are better than him. When you talk, so Drake now goes and messes with Pusha T and he gets what he gets. And so, yeah, this is now insult to injury after the Raptors get swept by the Cleveland Cavaliers. Here comes everyone's hero, Raptors global ambassador too, Drake.
Yes.
Getting curb stomped by a 41-year-old retired drug dealer from Newport News, Virginia. Now, add to that, we just had an election here, like a provincial election. So this would be like an election for a governor in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And the conservative, and stop me if you've heard this before, the guy that won the election is a fake blonde conservative populist without much of a platform, but a long track record of mixing business and politics for his own personal gain. Mm. Right? Doug Ford, who's the brother of Rob Ford, who you guys know is the guy that the mayor that smoked crack.
And he's dead. And so he passed away, right?
Yes. So Toronto's had these body blows back to back to back.
Damn.
Not to mention that the only thing that people really have been holding out hope for this summer, sports fans in Toronto, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's in the Blue Jays system. He's been dominating people in Double A. And then he went and got hurt the other day. So it's been a rough couple of months for Toronto, man.
Damn, man. I'm sorry.
Hey, got to roll with the punches, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jay Prince stepped in and stopped the beat.
Yes.
And then
absolutely.
And then at the same time, he was like, oh, well, Drake had something. So.
Well, this is the thing. So after Adidon comes out, right, you have to wonder, well, okay, well, what is Drake going to do? Because it's clear that he's been baited.
Yeah.
Right? If this is boxing, like, Pusha T just kind of fainted Drake. to get Drake to counter and then just walk Drake into like a big right hand. He dropped him. Mm-hmm. Right? And so now Drake's got to decide whether to get up or keep getting hurt. So this is, and when this was unfolding, I started thinking to myself, okay, so what can Drake really do? Because here's the thing, you can't shame shameless people, right?
Right.
So Drake already played the you don't sell as many drugs as you claim card. Cool. So now on the he can't make fun of Pusha T for being a common criminal, because Pusha T, like, of course I'm a criminal. That's all I rap about. I've been in this game since 1999, Drake. That's what I rap about. Who cares? Tell me I'm a criminal. Can't make fun of Pusha T's hair. Pusha T, haha, you got braids like it's 2002. And clearly he's not ashamed of it. You can't shame that guy. So what's Drake going to do? So his hands are really tied. And I remember seeing this. I was like, what's going to have to happen is that some type of respected elder is going to have to call the truth.
Right.
I was just wondering, like, who that respected elder was going to be. Whether they're going to go to Farrakhan like Common and Ice Cube did back in the day. I don't know, Al Sharpton, Lester Holt, who knows? Right. Third out, it was Jay Prince. And Jay Prince, because people keep saying, Jay Prince gets what Jay Prince wants. And Jay Prince can do anything except sell out a Floyd Mayweather fight in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh, is that what his one thing he tried to do?
He used to manage Floyd Mayweather. And when Jay Prince was managing Floyd Mayweather wasn't making that much money.
Mm.
It's only when he split from Jay Prince. But, so I have to say this, it's been a rough couple of months in Toronto, and Drake got outwitted. Yeah. And he fell into this trap. And there was nothing he could do, because Pusha T clearly showed, because Pusha T had nothing to lose. Because Pusha T can get out here and say all this ignorant stuff, and it's not going to make people think less of him, because people already don't think highly of him because he's a retired drug dealer with 2002 grades. Cool.
You know what?
And he still hangs out with Kanye West after the MAGA incident.
After the what?
He can't shame the guy because he put it all out there. So there's nothing Drake to do.
You said after he still hangs out with Kanye after what now?
After the MAGA incident.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Right, right, right.
So the guy, he's absolutely shameless, clearly, because most people after MAGA would be like, well, I'm not going to hang out with Kanye. My sense of pride and shame won't let me do that.
They've got so much. I feel like there's so much invested into that now, like as far as like his career. Because I think he's the president. He's an executive, at least, at Good Music, Pusha T is.
Pusha, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But.
And so.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, and this is. And this is the other fascinating aspect of this battle that didn't get covered enough. Because, again, here you have Drake, who's younger, a good 10 years younger than Pusha T is, right?
Yeah.
And he is, the Toronto Raptors global ambassador. Drake is supposed to be a guy that knows about marketing, right? Drake goes and sends this invoice and screenshots it and puts it on Instagram and Twitter. Cool. But Pusha T's ability to weaponize social media against Drake is a big part of what tied Drake's hands in this battle, right? Because Pusha T makes a song. All of a sudden, people are tweeting about it. Drake's trending on Twitter. Adidon's trending on Twitter. And then Drake becomes a meme. And once you become a meme to that extent, and people tweeting about Deadbeat Dad Drake, about Barbecue Snitch Drake, all this stuff. Photoshop stuff, memes, like, it's tough to come back from that. And all Pusha T did was make a song that wasn't as good as his first song, but it activated Black Twitter and, like, attack mode Black Twitter. There's no stopping attack mode Black Twitter. None. What it was, I told my friend, it was like, remember Aquaman on Super Friends?
Yes.
And so, like, all the other guys had their superpowers. Aquaman's superpowers just that he could get all the fish to do what he wanted them to do. So Aquaman himself wasn't the guy that apprehended the criminal. Aquaman would just send the vibes out to the fish, and the fish would go get the bad guy. And this is what Pusha T did with social media. Imagine a Raptors global ambassador getting outwitted and outmaneuvered on social media by a 41-year-old retired drug dealer. Imagine that. But that's what happened.
I think he'll get it. I think he'll survive. I think all he has to do.
He'll survive fine.
Because I think it's just like the new rules now. Because what we're used to is like, oh, he got him. That's it. Now it's just like, if these kids think that he's hot when this album comes out, whenever he, because I think Drake's in album mode or he's working on an album.
Yes.
And he comes out and that'll be it. Like the young people, they will dictate. I think they'll dictate what happens.
Yes.
We will look at him with a side eye, but.
And much like, you know, the way elections are decided, you know, and there are different criteria now, and all the old buttons you used to be able to push to win or lose an election, you can't push anymore.
Right.
So, you know, a generation ago, a conservative candidate being caught on audio saying, "Yeah, I grab him by the pussy, I do what I want."
Right.
Conservative, family values candidate, that would have torpedoed him.
Mm-hmm.
Or a presidential candidate who never released his tax returns. All these things would have torpedoed somebody a generation ago. Now people don't care. So just like people like from my generation, your generation, you have a guy that's like a rapper who claims to be an MC who admits to not writing his own stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's a pariah, not a pariah, but you categorize him differently.
Yes.
He doesn't get the same respect as other guys. Whereas now, like, Drake gets the same respect from a large segment of consumers as a guy who writes his own stuff because they don't care. And that was what happened with Meek Mill. Meek Mill went at him over the fact that he didn't write his own rhymes. And Drake was like, "Hey, I don't care. I'm going to get all my people together and write this response." There you go. And that was what happened.
Yeah.
And Drake, it's another dimension of just not being able to shame someone who doesn't feel shame. You should be ashamed of the fact that you don't write your own lyrics. "Well, I'm not ashamed. Now what?" And that was it.
Yeah.
And he neutralized them. And then Pusha T did the same thing to Drake, except he also managed. Imagine getting outmaneuvered by your uncle on social media, because this is what happened. A millennial lost a social media battle to a 41-year-old. Incredible.
A highly talented 41-year-old rapper.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Even though, like, a lot of his stuff is in the past has been one note, he's very good at that.
He's the hell out of that one note,
though. At that one note, right. Like,
right.
Because I was talking to a buddy, texting a buddy, like, when Daytona came out, and I was just like, "Yeah, this Pusha T's good, but he's just kind of one note. He's just talking about drugs." And he's like, "Well, I mean, that's the art, you know, the gangster movies, De Niro." I was like, "Yeah, but De Niro had a Meet the Parents and a Dirty Grandpa. You know, where's Pusha T's dirty? Where's the nuance?" Because, you know, I remember and talking to a friend, and then we'll get off this topic. I was talking to a friend about, you know, about this whole situation, and he was saying, like, I said, "Well, the clips were great, but I think they made the drug dealing and the gangster life, thug life, fun. Mob Deep, it sounded fun, but Mob Deep made you not want to get near it."
Yes.
Like, at all. Like, I'm fine being a Catholic school nerd. It was a great deterrent, because I thought, you know, just comparing those two groups, because Mobb Deep, like, it was so gully. It was just really,
yes,
like, it was, you know, it was just like it was a real deterrent. Like, and I was never faced with, should I go to the streets or go to school?
Yeah.
But it was just like, just being an observer, a listener too, I was just like, "Oh, no.
Yeah, well, that was like some of the most nihilistic shit like ever made. Remember Right Back At You, like before the remix from the Sunset Park soundtrack, like,
oh,
the
shit.
Original,
wow.
Right Back At You.
Took it back.
He was like, "We can go together. As long as I send your maggot ass to your essence, I don't give a fuck about my present." Who talks like that? Is it really worth it?
Oh my God.
I couldn't wrap my brain around that, you know, even as an impressionable 18-year-old, and used to try to like convince yourself that you are also walking in these rappers' shoes. I don't hate anybody that much.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, we can both die. I'll be happy.
Because like you, when I was, because I I knew of them, like, what was it, like 93, 94-ish when they were...
Yeah, Peer Pressure.
Yeah, like, yes. I remember, I was like, okay, yeah, Mobb Deep. But then, like, I really got into them with Hell on Earth, and then I went back. So, like, I remember...
Oh, okay.
That was, like, 90... Because, dude, I remember getting that CD. That was, like, I graduated in 98, and I remember buying Hell on Earth, which I think came out 96, 97. And at the same time, I bought Davina. Do you remember Davina?
No.
She was a black chick, and she had a song, I Don't Want to Be Wrong, But It Feels Right. She was kind of like a female D'Angelo in a way.
Okay, no, I don't remember her, man. Same gap in my memory.
She was off of Loud Records. I feel like... I just don't want to tread in the same R&B territory we always go into, but I don't mind it. But I just don't want to, like, if I'm repeating myself. But like, I remember I think they were both. She might have been off of Loud Records too. But do you remember Adriana Evans?
Nuh-uh. I think you're a lot closer to all this stuff being on the East Coast than okay. I was. Like at that point, I was in Chicago, so a lot of stuff I was getting, but you know, in the pre.
But see, your knowledge is more expansive than mine. Because you know all like a lot of the old school stuff, like very very like old school before our time. You know what I mean? Like
you know why that was because. If you got listeners in Buffalo, they'll tell you about WBLK. Like, what a creatively named black radio station, right? W Black.
We Black.
Yes. Yeah. WBLK. Well, you could get that in Toronto, right?
Okay.
In the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And so I used to listen to, like, The Quiet Storm, like, every night. I listen to The Quiet Storm.
Yeah.
And that's how I learned, like, a lot of, like, a lot of the slow jams, but, like, a lot of the old slow jams. Because, like, after 11, they'd start playing. You know, stuff from the 70s. That's where I learned a lot of that stuff.
Got you. Yeah, yeah.
W Black.
I just remember those. I just remember that I would, because I was a real R&B guy, and I had like the Keith Murray, Redman, Method Man. You know, I liked all that stuff, but you know, I was really into like Rahsaan Patterson.
Yeah, from Kids Incorporated.
Yeah. Like, oh, he was from Kids Incorporated. Oh, shit. I didn't even know.
Of course he was. That's where I first heard of him.
And like how good, and I'll go to my grave saying Ray J's first album, what the fuck is his first album? Everything You Want, because he had I think Rodney Jerkins worked on that. And I think he had like Keith Crouch working on it, producing it. Rahsaan Patterson, Kenny Lattimore singing background vocals.
Jeez.
Like I remember that. That was like 97. Like so like I remember all that stuff. And then like Mobb Deep just being like, "Oh shit." Like you know, like it's just like these guys are really good, but it's just like it was too intense, and by the time I got to my freshman year, I was getting into like I knew who Nas was, but I was like getting into Nas, you know. And then that's when I started really forming my taste in like hip hop, like when it comes to like the people that I like listening to now, like The Roots and Common.
Right.
But let's get into I want to get into what you're listening to now. What are you liking? Now, like, what's on your phone? What's on your?
Let's pull up. Because basically, what I do is every day I come to Spotify, look at the daily mix, and see what they're talking about.
Okay.
So right now, so daily mix number one is just like heavy with like sleazy '90s R&B stuff, and the second one is like Feral Monch.
Okay.
Type stuff. Go ahead.
What'd you think of the new Black Thought EP?
Oh, it was dope.
Yeah.
It was dope. And the thing is, too, like, if Black Thought wasn't part of a group, more people would have him in the greatest of all time discussion.
I think he is the greatest of all time.
Me too.
I think there's him. It's like him and everybody else.
Yep.
And because it's really not that fair to compare him. You know, because I know he, like, Rakim was like his blueprint. Rakim, maybe Big Daddy Kane.
Right.
Like people that he, I think that he cites as his, you know, favorites. But I think it's just, he's just far and away the great. And he's just now starting to, like, talk and do interviews after that.
Yes.
After that 10-minute freestyle. So you kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah, you kind of get to know who he is a little bit more. But because,
right.
Like, before, like, I look at a guy like him as, like, one of those, like, God MCs where it's, like, he's just, like, another being. Whereas, like, I would say him and Mos Def to a certain degree, Common, even though now Common's been a little more humanized because he's doing more, like, acting and stuff. And people,
yeah, well, because Common turned into a cream puff, is the thing.
And people, see, that's what, like, that, and it's just so, I just.
And it makes you look differently a lot of his past stuff.
Well, like,
that was a big Common booster for a long time, but if, you know, if you're being honest with yourself, he had some really boring albums, man.
Well, I would say, like, because I had this conversation with some buddies on a podcast, like, a couple months ago, when we talk about, like, you hit him with, like, Resurrection.
Right.
Even if you go from, like, Resurrection, One Day It'll All Make Sense, then you go to, Like Water for Chocolate, B, maybe you throw in Find It Forever, but from that run to, from Resurrection to B, so what are we talking, like, 94 to 2005?
Yeah, it's about a 10-11 year span.
10-11 year span, you gotta say, the guy's, he's one of the greats, and most people's careers don't even get past that. And so it's like, okay, he's dope, and like, I just feel like some black entertainers, when it comes to, we're just, my brain's running really fast right now, but like hip hop guys, they don't get to age gracefully like the aging rock stars, where it's like, yeah, my daughter and I like playing golf.
Well, it depends. Cause I think about this a lot, right? Yeah. There's a lot of pressure, like, on a lot of rappers, especially if they have, like, girlfriends or wives or fiancés or whatever. They're like, listen, man, I can't be married to no 45-year-old rapper.
Yeah.
Go get something that seems more legitimate so these cats start acting, right? And not everyone makes a transition, but everyone's looking at Will Smith, Ice Cube, LL Cool J. Like, hey, they can make the transition. Why can't you?
Yeah.
But it is hard. Like, when you think about... You think about, like, that beer commercial where the beer bottles were dousing Ice Cube, right?
Mm-hmm,
do you remember this? Like, warm, cuddly, fuzzy Ice Cube getting doused by beer bottles, by sentient beer bottles,
right?
Right, and they're like, here, let's just jizz all over Ice Cube, and Ice Cube just taking it.
Yeah, I remember that. Right? I remember being mad about that. I was like, what the fuck?
That hurt my feelings, man, because I was in high school. Like, what was Ice Cube? What was the name of the song at the top of the Death Certificate album? Long Nigga to Fuck. Right? And here goes these beer bottles fucking with Ice Cube, and Ice Cube isn't saying shit about it. Like, that's sad. Like, because when you're young, like, that type of angry hip-hop like that was,
yeah,
like your manhood, right?
Right, right. That pro.
And the next thing you know, the guy that did No Vaseline is over here and stay true to the game and all this stuff. Don't sell out. You're yelling Compton, but you move to Riverside. Blah blah blah. He's over here getting jizzed on by beer bottles, man. That's sad.
It's weird because it's like it's like that, like the pro wrestling thing when you find out what that really is, and
yes. And again, it was like Drake, because this is the thing about rappers, right? How many rappers use their real name? This is the thing about all of them, is that all of them, to an extent, are actors. They're playing a character.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Rashid Lynn is one guy, Common is another. O'Shea Jackson is one guy, Ice Cube is another dude. Mm-hmm. Right? They're playing characters.
Right. Well, that's why.
Yeah, and it's just like when you find out that the character the guy's playing isn't the real guy, it's a little disappointing.
That's true, and I think, like, but with Common, where it's just like I'll never say that he's corny, where it's hard for me to say that, and people will kind of like make fun of him and stuff, like.
Well, because he did turn corny, man. He turned into the cream puff. You just have to accept that.
I mean, that August shit. That August Green shit is dope.
To an extent, I'm conflicted about Common because Common, to me, seems like he is struggling more than other guys struggle with middle age, because he wants to be the guy. If you watch him rap, like, he wants to rap with symphonies, right? And like, it's hard. Like, I remember watching it, and I put myself in his, and I thought to myself, like, how hard is it to figure out how to wear a tuxedo but also gesticulate the way a rapper needs to gesticulate? Mm. You know what I'm saying? That's a tough thing to do. It's a really tough thing to do. Like,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, like Big Daddy Kane could pull it off, but that was the character he played.
That's who
right?
it was, yeah.
We were growing up, there was in Toronto, there was a rapper named Maestro Fresh West.
Okay.
So every few years he would come up, he would just rip off another rapper. So like when we were coming up, Maestro Fresh West tried to be like Big Daddy Kane Jr. But that was the character he played, where he would wear like a tuxedo with tails and a cummerbund, and he would pretend to be this conductor, mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
So, and then he came out a few years. Sorry, then he moved to Brooklyn, and he started trying to hang out with Showbiz and AG. So in 94, 95, he did a bunch of songs trying to sound like the Bigger Than the Craze crew. And he disappeared, came back late 90s, trying to sound like Jay-Z.
So he's like,
every
like,
few years, it was
Drake.
Something else. But now he's another one that like started acting and all this stuff. But it's, Drake did the other way. He started out as an actor and then started rapping.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I always, Common is a cream puff, and we gotta accept that.
I mean, he was never like, I never thought of him like, because he evolved as an artist. Like, he was doing like the street, like Can I Borrow a Dollar type shit, Beef
yep.
and Ice Cube, and like all that. Like, you know, I don't know, man. I still think he's in my top five, and he's not gonna leave. He's not going to leave my top five, but I don't know. Like, we're in a different realm because, like, Jay-Z's almost
yeah.
50. You know, like, I like
yeah.
Fonte, like, his album is dope. Like, he's almost 40. And, like, he's, like, I think No News is Good News is the best, one of the best projects.
Yeah. Well, the difference with Fonte is that he can sing. And so he can do things other than trying to be this aging rapper. That's a really tough needle to thread.
Yeah.
Aging rapper. Now, bitter middle-aged rappers are my favorite rappers. The best.
Well, I think
they've just been working at the craft all these years, and they're mad about not having made more money. I love bitter middle-aged rappers. But a guy like Common, you can tell, is kind of struggling with that because he can't sing. He has to find these different vehicles that make him seem, you know, more than a rapper. Like, when he just MCs, he's dope.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's trying to kind of reinvent himself as this progressive, wise, middle-aged rapper. And I don't quite buy it.
Gotcha. I understand where you're coming from.
Maybe don't buy it is too strong of a phrase, but it just doesn't resonate with me. The way that, like, one of the reasons Black Thought's been able to age gracefully is because he has a band.
Yeah.
And so he's a big part of a band as opposed to a guy that's just trying to write dope rhymes at 46 years old, even though he does do that.
And I feel like I alluded to earlier, I feel like we just started to get to know, we're starting to get to know Black Thought. Because he was very enigmatic. And what I think about, like, what I appreciate about Fonte is the fact that he's very autobiographical. So
yeah.
It's like you can tell, like, okay, this guy is going through this, or he had gone through this, and he's, like, putting himself out there. And when you hear when you hear no news is good news, you have an idea of where he's at in life and,
yes.
and what he's trying to deal with and everything like that. So it's like, so this album was just like a natural progression. Whereas when you hear Jay-Z, it's like 444 last year, everybody was like, oh my God. But there's guys that do that have been doing that. But obviously you get a mainstream artist yes. that does this thing like that. You know, people are gonna, you know, take note. And a lot of the guys that I like anyway, like Odyssey, Sky Zoo, like they're very much like, oh, this is about when I was a kid. This is, I'm going to tell you about my life. So it's not, they're not as guarded as maybe MCs that have been in the past, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Because there's this thing, like when we were growing up, you know, so much of hip hop was wrapped up in machismo.
Mm-hmm.
And like rappers had to try to seem invulnerable. Right.
Yeah.
And which is different from what you hear now, or from what you hear like Black Thought rapping about.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's like intrigued me about these older rappers is when they pop up at these NPR Tiny Desk concerts.
Yes.
But again, but this is what the middle aged rappers are doing, right? Is that they're getting rid of the DJ, saying let me get a little band, put some instrumentals behind these tracks that used to be samples. And then I go. So like there's one with OC.
Yeah.
I love a bit of middle aged rappers. OC's on there. And then there's one with Big Daddy Kane. What amazed me about Big Daddy Kane.
He did one?
Listen, you gotta watch this one with Big Daddy Kane, because Big Daddy Kane is like he's only 2 years older than Black Thought. But okay. These guys seem like they come from two complete different generations. Like Big Daddy Kane, like the persona, he is an uncle. He is your uncle.
Yeah.
Even though he's gonna like he's not even 10 years older than I am, probably. Big Daddy Kane's probably like, I'm 41. Big Daddy Kane's maybe 50, about 48, 49, something like that. But, like, his whole bearing is that he is my uncle. He's my Uncle Ken, Big Daddy Kane. Okay. He shades and, like, a fedora. And I don't know if he had a toothpick, but he might as well have a toothpick.
I think he's down in Durham now. I think that's where he lives.
Would make perfect sense, because he seems like he's of that generation.
Yeah, he'll be.
You watch Big Daddy Kane and listen to him talk. And then you listen to Tyreek Trotter. And, like, again, you guys are 2 years apart. Both grew up on the East Coast. But, like, Big Daddy Kane has really embraced his identity as not just a hip-hop elder, but, like I said, as your uncle.
He is 40. He's 49. He'll be 50 in September.
Right.
Yeah.
But his bearing is that of probably a 65-year-old man.
Some people.
And I'm not mad at him, but that's just his bearing. That's just what it is.
Some people embrace that shit. Like getting older, like they love it.
Yes,
and I like it too. Obviously, as like a black dude, you want to get older. Everybody wants to live for as long as they can. But I know, like, you know how people like you got to always have a friend that's like, oh, I'm getting old, man. Oh, but they like it, you know.
Yep.
I guess I might be like that in a way too. I don't mind getting old, but
buddy, listen. It happens, everybody. Here I am. I got this house in the suburbs, and I'm like, yeah, Saturday I got to cut the lawn. Like, this is highlight. This is the old guy stuff. And now, like, the lawn care is a highlight of my week. And I walk down the street, and I'm looking at other people's lawns, like, ooh, what are they doing with their lawn? Maybe I can do the same thing with mine.
Yeah.
It comes for you, man. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, what are you, like, because I just discovered, like, I just now had a like subscribe to a streaming music service to Tidal, and now like because I used to be kind of like just tethered to my like oh I like this stuff that's on my iTunes, and now
right.
and now when somebody tells me like I'm on Instagram like I was talking about it on the latest episode that's currently up right now. Like Bobby McFerrin's daughter, Madison McFerrin, she's amazing.
Really?
Yeah, she's got like two EPs out, and I haven't even started like looking at her YouTube channel yet. That's probably a rabbit hole that I'll just like be on like one weekend night or something. But she's good. Like I just saw like Wyatt Cenac was at her concert, in Brooklyn a couple nights ago, and I follow Wyatt on Instagram, mm-hmm. and I was and shout out to Wyatt Cenac, he's like, oh, Madison McFerrin. I was like, oh, okay. And then I went to go to the grocery store, and I pulled her up on Tidal. I was like, this girl's good.
You know? What, she sings?
Yeah, she's a singer. She's kind of doing the stuff like her dad, like she's doing like the vocal and
like acapella stuff.
Acapella stuff and very light production, and she's just doing her thing, man. She's really good.
Okay.
And you guys got did we talk about Daniel Caesar?
We might have. He's from two towns over. So I'm in Ajax, Ontario. He's from Oshawa, which is same Durham region. Oshawa's other claim to fame is that they have like a big GM factory. They used to make Camaros there.
Okay.
And I think the Camaros, yeah. But yes.
He's great. Like, his Tiny Desk is on YouTube now.
Right.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but I like when black people do them. Is that bad?
You like what?
I like when black people do those Tiny Desks, black artists.
Yes.
Because they go in, like, or it's just like people that I like in general, but I get a little more excited. I think one of my favorite ones, T-Pain's is really good. That someone put me on. I was like, yeah, because I knew that he could sing, but he's really good. And I liked Leanne LeHavis,
okay.
She's a singer from the UK, British girl that can sing really, you know. But Tiny Desks really are good.
Yeah, I've seen T-Pain's. I wasn't as impressed with T-Pain's as other people were, mainly because I feel like, and I get this vibe from Donald Glover too when he sings, where people hear them sing, but judge them as singers, as rappers. Right, you come in with these super low expectations. Mm-hmm. I think you can carry a tune, and everyone's like, "Oh, he's great! You gotta listen to T-Pain. He sung without autotune. He's great. I listen to T-Pain sing without autotune. He's not bad. He can carry a tune."
Yeah, he's fine. Like it was better than I thought it would be. Like, I had heard him sing without it before, but I was like, "Oh yeah, this is pretty good. This is
he's no Darrell Tank Babs. You know what I'm saying?
Who is that? I don't even know who that is.
Tank."
Who?
His real name is Darrell Babs. Tank, my boy. He's no Tank.
Oh, Tank. That's it. Okay.
Yeah, he's no Tank.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Well,
Tank had
some. People are, you know.
What
few people are.
Who I'll I don't know, man. Another I'll go to my grave, like Glenn Lewis. What the fuck, man?
Yeah. Oh, see, we always wind up talking about Glenn Lewis, and I don't know what he's been doing since last time we talked about
him. You broke it down. You broke it down really well. Like you said, like leading man. He's trying to be. Maybe he's trying to be like the leading man when he could have just been like a character actor, singer type guy.
Yeah. Well, it's hard, being the R&B leading man, especially when he was coming along. That's like being the three down running back. Like, there's a lot of people trying to get that job. And it's very easy just to get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're the guy that, you know, plays some special teams and stuff,
Did you ever listen to that album that I sent you?
I might have.
The Chasing Goosebumps.
Because Eric Robertson wrote a couple songs on the album.
I think so.
Yeah.
Like that touch of jazz, like.
Yeah, I listened to it. Never got into like heavy rotation, but I did listen.
It is good. Like I just want him. You know, I just want more for him. I think he's going. I follow him on social media. I think he's going on tour or something like that.
Yeah, and it's a tough racket. You know, and like my family is full of musicians, and they can tell you how tough that racket is, right? And how tough it is to get a big song. Something that's going to make you famous and make you money, especially to make you money, right? Get you some songwriting credit so the song keeps paying you. And the other thing with black artists in Canada is that, like, this market doesn't really make room for more than one famous black person at a time. It's the fact that people get famous in the U.S. that makes the rest of Canada really starts to notice them.
What about... What about
Drake,
like
Caesar, Division, Melanie Fiona, all you guys? Like,
yeah,
you know, they
made
some noise in Canada, but it's when they started making noise in the U.S. that the Canadians said, "Oh yeah, these guys."
I love your, like, I don't know, you kind of have like a disdain for that. For
And listen, man, here's the thing, because I'm born and raised in Canada, my parents are American, so there's a lot of my outlooks on life are very Canadian.
Yeah.
And a lot are very American.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what it is.
Yeah.
It's like being Canadian and American to me is like having a mom and a dad. Like, I'm 100% Canadian, but I'm also 100% American. That's what I am. I identify as African American, but I live here in Canada. I'm Afro American Canadian. So,
yeah.
Like, you talking to me about healthcare? Like, healthcare is a right.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. We're not going to debate this.
Yeah.
It's a right. Everyone has a right to have healthcare and not to have to go bankrupt because they broke their leg. Yeah. I don't entertain any arguments or debates otherwise. And that's a very Canadian way to think. I don't want to hear all this. I don't think single payer is evil. I don't want to hear all this shit about what insurance companies got to do to be able to get involved in universal health care. Don't give me that shit. It's
you.
A right. Just like a road is a right. We have roads right outside the house. We don't have to pay to get on the road to go to school. Right? But like even,
y'all
liberal
have,
Americans.
Y'all don't have tolls?
I mean, you do, but I'm just like, the streets and the out, like,
yeah.
Get out on the street to go to the store. You don't have to pay a toll every time you get on the street.
Yeah.
But even liberal Americans think I'm, you know, radical for saying that. But to me, it's a non-starter. Everybody should be covered. It shouldn't cost you no money to go see the doctor, or very minimal money. But at the same time, now, when it comes to, like, inferiority complexes and thinking small the way Canadians do, yes, I have disdain for the word.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I like. Yeah. It's like, because I was thinking, like, yeah, because you mentioned all those people, and I was thinking, like, what about what's my girl, cute girl, Alessia Cara?
Yeah,
same thing.
She was a YouTube star, right? Yeah, she was never even famous in Canada. She was a YouTube star. She got big on YouTube.
Yeah.
Then got signed.
Right.
And that's always very often the way it is.
Because people were mad about her winning. I think, who did she beat? She beat SZA and for Best New Artist. And, like, they're both good. Like, because I remember, like, that record, that record here, when I was like, oh, this girl's good. Like, she's kind of ethnic, but she's not. But, like, is she white? Like, she's kind of like.
I have no clue. I don't know what her.
I think she's, like, Italian and something else. But she's very cute. And she's good, like, and so, and I listened to SZA's album, and I was like, SZA's good, and people, I know, you know how Black Twitter can get, who is that? I was like, nah, she's good. She's got stadium songs, stadium records, and I think she was opening for, I had a friend that went to see, what's the guy that used to be married to Gwyneth Paltrow? Chris Martin.
Oh, man, I don't know.
Oh, shit. I'm getting old, man. What is this? Chris Chris Martin. I know the listeners are like, Chris, you fucking idiot. Oh, my God. I can see. That's bad that I don't know these guys. Chris Martin. Coldplay.
Yes. Yeah, okay.
I think she was opening for Coldplay like a year or two ago. And I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. And she won. She's good. She's just, she could take, she can do Drake better than Drake. She would do his cover.
You talking about Drake singing?
Yes, she did like.
Absolutely.
She did a cover of Hotline Bling. She'd do, because she's a Drake fan, obviously. She's like, what, 21, mm-hmm. 22 years old. And she's a big Drake fan. And she would do like covers of his. I'm like, God, this sounds better than Drake shit.
Of course it does, because Drake is not a good singer.
So she would smash just about anybody's song, really. But, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, I wanted to get your take on Terrell Owens and what he's decided to do with the Hall of Fame. Like, this is, this has to be pretty unprecedented, right?
Yep. One of the things I learned about Terrell Owens just today, his middle name is El Dorado.
Really?
Yep. Terrell El Dorado Owens.
Wow. I'm looking that up right now. Jesus Christ. It is. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Now, in terms of Terrell Owens, like, opting out of his own Hall of Fame induction ceremony,
mm-hmm.
it's about the most Terrell Owens thing Terrell Owens can do. Now, I don't even necessarily disagree with him for saying I'm not coming to this party, because Terrell Owens should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Only one NFL player with more receiving yards than Terrell Owens, that's Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice played 75 seasons. Terrell Owens, like, when you look at his career stats and how many years he led the league in one category or another, right? Even into his second last season, he had, like, the longest pass play, longest reception of the year. This is a 36-year-old man mm-hmm. out here scoring 98-yard touchdowns.
Yeah.
So that means there were four or five defensive backs on the field, depending on the coverage. If he's 36, most of those, unless Ed Reed was on the field, all those defensive backs are younger than Terrell Owens.
Yeah.
And none of them could catch him over the span of 98 yards, right?
Right.
It is almost unprecedented to be that old and still, you know, taking the top off of defenses like that. Yeah. Really only T.O. and Randy Moss could run that fast that old. Now, T.O.'s not anywhere near as fast as Randy Moss, but just the point is, like, he's fast enough to make a 98-yard touchdown. 36 years old.
Yep.
But at the same time, because the writers didn't like him,
mm-hmm.
you know, and these writers get to vote on these Hall of Fame inductions, they make him wait. Why? Right? Because he's not – listen, there are a few NFL writers I like, but NFL writers is a group – are annoying.
Mm. How so? Explain that. Explain.
One, like, especially on Twitter, they're just aggressive knowers of football.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so aggressive about what they know. I'm like, I don't care that you watch the All 22 film. Like, I'd take my dudes watching All 22, like, where, like, the coaching film from, like, they shoot it from way high up so you can see every player on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. Like, you know, and when you played in college, you had that stuff force fed to you.
Yeah.
So, whatever, like, if you really want to speak the language, like, I can speak the language too, but I don't hold it against people. Like, if you want to talk football with me, we can talk football. If there's something you don't understand, I could probably make you understand it, but you don't have to be aggressive and a jerk about it.
Right.
This is what, there's just a lot of football writers unfollowed on Twitter. Like, I can't, you guys diminish the game watching experience for me. And there's football writers just as a group.
Yeah.
And, you know, the good ones know who they are, like Mike Freeman, Felder, Steve White, like, these guys really help you understand football. Like, they open doors to you to understand football. I knew a lot about football, and I still learn about football from these guys.
Yeah.
But, like, the Albert Breers of the world who just trumpet the coaches' talking points and the league talking points, they're useless. Like, you read a story, you think you know more about football than you did at the beginning, but you actually know less. But these are the guys who control who gets into the Hall of Fame. And so when a guy like Terrell Owens comes along, because he's was always flashy, because he was such an individual, they decide they're going to punish him for being different than him, because they hold his Hall of Fame fate in their hands. So when they finally get around to voting him in, hey, we're going to do you a favor, even though you got the second most receiving yards ever, even though you had the longest reception in the league at 36 years of age. And I'm just like an overweight football writer or an underweight football writer. Mm-hmm. I guzzle coffee and drink cigarettes and smoke cigarettes, but I'm going to decide for you when you get to join this Hall of Fame. Here, I'll do you this favor. You're in the Hall of Fame. So now it's very true. I always like to be like, yeah, thanks. I'll take the enshrinement, but I'm not coming to your party.
Right.
I'm not celebrating on your time.
One thing, though, but I think we would, and I think Bomani and Pablo mentioned this on High Noon, where I just feel like we'd be missing out on that speech, but maybe he'll do something.
He has said that he's going to do his own ceremony, right?
Okay, okay.
At some other time and date. And again, it would make sense because then, you know, the same obnoxious football writers who delayed Terrell Owens' entry into the Hall of Fame, they're not going to be the ones that wind up showing up at the Terrell Owens gala. Mm-hmm. Right? It would be a different set of people. It would be like social media, whatever it is. But I'm actually not mad at Terrell Owens.
I'm not either. Like, is that kind of like the, with football, like the gym, like with baseball, is it Tim Rice or Jim Rice? Where he didn't really talk to the media that much.
Jim Rice.
Jim Rice. Yeah. It's just kind of like, you didn't give us what we wanted, so fuck.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and baseball writers are as bad as football writers are, for sure.
Now, I felt like we talked about this before, but it's been over a year now. I don't care about football anymore. That makes me kind of sad, man. It's like I'm angry and sad. Dude, like when in the thick of the playoff hunt in November, yeah. I went to go see Lady Bird. The Greta Gerwig movie. You're not a movie guy.
No.
But that's a coming of age story about a precocious white girl. Really a bratty white girl who needed to give her mom a fucking break. I went to go see that. It got nominated for Oscars and stuff, but I went to go see that, man, because I just, part of it's Kaepernick, part of it's, you know, my obsession, my love for black quarterbacks. And then it's just like, and then I was feeling some kind of way about the game, like the last 5 to 7 years anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on the game? Or do you have to like it because you're a sports writer?
No, not necessarily. Like I enjoy the sport of football.
Yeah.
You
played it.
Yeah. Well, but it's just a shame that we got to deal with the NFL to the highest level of football
mm-hmm.
on the planet.
Yeah.
Because the NFL, in so many ways, has sold out its black players who make up the bulk of the talent in the league. Mm-hmm. And the bulk of the elite talent in the league.
Yeah.
And what? Because this is like what I love about pro sports is that I get to see the best compete against the best. That's what I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, even from a moralistic standpoint, like, if you guys have been that has been a criminal in the past or whatever, like, well, this guy should never play again because he's a criminal. Like, well, you know what? If he is. One, has he paid his debt to society? Has he gone to prison?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Okay, he's out of prison, so he's not currently under state supervision. All right. If he's good enough, let him try. That's that. That's what I like about boxing. There are no air barriers to entry, right? The boxing is political in its own way. So the problem with the NFL and what this Colin Kaepernick fiasco is showing you is that it's not a meritocracy.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are good enough to play in the NFL who are not playing in the NFL for reasons other than football skill. So how are they different from baseball before 1947? How are they different from baseball before the influx of Cuban players? All these guys, Yasiel Puig 20 years ago, wouldn't have been in the league. All these guys are good enough for political reasons, racism, whatever, kept them out. So don't tell me this is the best football in the world. It might be the best football in the world, but it's not as good. It's not as good as it can and should be, because you guys got hang-ups about letting black players who protest peacefully into this league.
Right.
And so, what is it you're trying to sell me? What is it you're trying to sell the public? Because
mm-hmm.
The other thing is, like, you got your way. You might think you're pleasing people by selling them this diminished product. And that might get people in the short run, but in the long run, the more people you try to freeze out because you don't like their politics, And you get yourself a league that's, because right now the NFL is probably 72% black. Even at 66% black is a different product. 60% black is a different product. Mm-hmm. 50% black is a much different product. And get out there and try to sell that. Get out there and try to sell that. Try to sell the idea that this is the best football that's possible.
Yeah. I was writing, like, I'm trying to write something on black quarterbacks for my set, and I was doing a show. I was telling my listeners last week that I was pleasantly surprised that I was doing a show in Connecticut, and it was a all black crowd for the most part, and it was and it was like in Middletown, Connecticut, which I guess is not that far from Bristol. It's not that far. I guess. I don't think it is, And I was like, oh, I didn't know you guys were going to be all black. I guess I can talk about real shit now. And I started talking about Kaepernick and black quarterbacks. And it was to the point where, like, they were agreeing with me and they liked what I was saying. But I was like, this sounds too much like a town hall meeting. I sound like they agree with me and, like, we're in church. But, like, I was like, there's jokes in here. But, like, it's like, I don't know, man. Like, it's a turnoff, and I know how people are like, oh, well, you can just because of the black guys getting killed, and I was like, that's not it. Like, it's just the way that they try to, like, it makes me hate, like, sports radio, like sports talk radio, where it's like,
yeah,
you got to hear about what people think about Kaepernick, or he's, you know, or what they think about certain players, and it's bullshit, man.
Well, one thing the NFL doesn't understand is that Roger Goodell says our fans want this. Our fans want to force players to stand for the anthem. And again, Harold Bryant does a brilliant job in laying this out in his book, his new book, The Heritage.
I gotta get that.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with the fans. This has everything to do with a business partnership between the NFL and the U.S. military. Mm-hmm. And this, it only dates back to probably 2009, yeah, where players were actually part of this pregame pageant. Mm-hmm. Before that, no one cared if all the team came out, if no one came out, if players were in the locker room during the anthem. Like, I played college ball. We were never on the field during the anthem, and no one missed it.
I didn't even
know.
No
one cried about it.
I didn't even know that. We were on the field during the anthem. Yeah, man.
Right. You run around on the field before warrants, go back in the locker room. They play the anthem, we run back out, and that was that.
Yeah.
And we weren't hearing, like, and people weren't telling us back then, oh, you know what you guys need before the game is that you need the anthem to show that you respect the military. Nobody cared. Until this corporate partnership between the NFL and the U.S. military. And the U.S. military wants to use the NFL's popularity to try to recruit. Mm-hmm. And that's all it is. And so it's not about the fans. Now, you tell the fans that that's what they want, and they wind up parroting your talking points back to you. But 10 years ago, no one cared. 11 years ago, no one cared if the teams were on the field, if the anthem or not. And it's certainly not part of – certainly wasn't part of the broadcast product.
Yeah.
You can show the anthem and not show the anthem. Like, when I watch baseball and I watch the Blue Jays, they don't always – very rarely they show the pregame anthems.
Right.
You know what? And people survive. I don't feel my viewing experience is diminished because I didn't watch a bunch of people standing around while the anthem played.
Yeah, man. It's become like, I just get tired of hearing people talk about it. Like, I just, because it's just, it's a moot point, because when the owners knelt, it was over. Nobody knelt anymore.
Yes.
Nobody gave a shit, and it's part
of it. They went and reignited this thing, mm-hmm, right, because they're scared of Donald Trump, and they wanted to appease Donald Trump. There is no appeasing Donald Trump.
Right.
And that's the other thing they're going to learn. Because he'll come back to this during the season.
It just makes me feel bad, though, like, that I'm, like, because I didn't boycott. I just kind of had the game. I had the, you know, the NFL red zone. And I would like to know what happens, like, if a black quarterback was doing something, if Jameis was doing something, if Tyrod Taylor was, you know, it's just like, okay, good, they won. But It used to be fun, and this was like 3 or 4 years. You know, it was it was sad. You know, I was sad because Cam Newton lost, and I didn't like how that fell apart. And like a few years ago, I was because football was kind of fun again for me. Like, mm-hmm. like around that Cam Newton time, him dragging that sorry ass team to the Super Bowl, and. You know, like Twitter was fun with it, but it just doesn't seem like it's just not the same. Like that time period of Terrell Owens playing, you know, how it'd be fun. Like it just like I haven't gotten bought Madden in like 3 or 4 years. It's just I don't know, man.
Yeah, well, and that's a big problem that the NFL is going to have to solve because they also have. You know, these aggressive revenue goals. They're trying to double revenue from what it was in 2011-ish to 2025. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you do that with a diminished product.
Yeah.
Because people watch football to watch football.
Right.
And again, the you start shutting out players who are clearly qualified to play. You already have a sport that's dangerous. And so the number of people who can play... you have a higher turnover of bodies because people just get hurt and careers don't last long. And that's the way it goes. And so it's in the NFL's best interest to have a bigger talent pool, not a smaller talent pool. They are shutting people out who are qualified to play because you don't like the fact that they stand up for black people. Well, do that if you want. But again, 6-7 years from now, you don't have enough people to fill out rosters. Like as college football coaches like to say, don't point the finger, point the thumb. Because you created this environment, right? And the next Colin Kaepernick, like, people forget about Colin Kaepernick, is a very good baseball player. And so like the next Colin Kaepernick who's trying to decide between baseball and football, like look at this kid right now.
From Oklahoma?
Kyler Murray.
Is he Oklahoma?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I think he's a lunatic for going back to play one more season of college football. But just the fact that like at any point, at the end of high school, partway through college, end of college. So, no, let's get to before the end of college. At any point, at the end of high school or partway through college, baseball can draft you and say, here's a bunch of money. Right now, take it. You're 18. Take it.
Yeah.
And you're most likely not going to die playing our sport. Whereas in football, you might not die directly, but you might suffer the injury that leads to an early death.
Right.
For a lot less money.
What position is that kid?
So he plays, he's an outfielder and he's a quarterback.
Oh yeah.
So here comes this guy. Like, why would he go to the NFL?
And they were talking about what's the wide receiver, the pitcher for the Cubs, Samardzija.
Oh yeah, Samardzija. Yeah. And again, and the comparison they always make is Samardzija and Calvin Johnson because they turned pro the same year.
Okay.
You know, and they say, well, Samardzija chose baseball, Johnson chose football, but the thing was, it's not like they both chose it coming out of college. It wasn't like. After college, Calvin Johnson could have been a pro baseball player. Like he chose football over baseball at an earlier point in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm baseball, but I'm not sure how committed baseball really is to getting African Americans back in the game. And it's a systemic thing with baseball. But if I'm baseball, those are the kids I'm talking to.
Right.
Right? The high school kids, before junior high school kids, black kids who have some athletic ability. And I'm talking them into using their athletic ability on the baseball field rather than going out there and risking concussions every day mm-hmm. playing football. And the difference, though, is that there aren't as many full scholarships in baseball. And that's really, like, if college baseball were a bigger business, you would see more black people in it because teams would have more money to recruit and they would throw full scholarships at kids. Because, you know, if you're a two-sport star, baseball, football, football coach says here's a full scholarship. Baseball coach says, look, we got 18.7 scholarships to spread among 25 kids. How is it like 35% of a scholarship? Well, no. But what baseball does have is the ability to turn pro straight out of high school with somebody without anybody telling you you can't do it. You can get paid right away. You can get seven-figure contract at 18 years old if you're that good. But baseball, if it was serious, it would find ways to make the sport cheaper and get out and get these kids. I bring this point up all the time. It's remember when Deshaun Jackson was leaving Philadelphia, and people started leaking these stories about how he was this gangster.
He's a thug.
And how he was getting run out. Yes, and how he's getting run out of Philadelphia by some goons and all this stuff.
Yes.
And then Richard Sherman wound up writing an essay for Sports Illustrated defending this contact. He said, no, we grew up together in Los Angeles. We played on the same baseball team. So think about the fact that Richard Jefferson and DeSean Jackson both played baseball.
Richard Sherman.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine these guys. What would those guys be doing in the major leagues? Major League Baseball hasn't seen an athlete like those two. Very rarely do they see an athlete of either of those guys' caliber.
Right.
Right? The fastest baseball player you've ever seen none of these guys would last 20 yards with DeSean Jackson.
No.
Billy Hamilton, Trey Turner, whoever the other, D. Gordon, these are fast baseball guys. They're fast guys, Malik Smith.
Well, Deion Sanders, but yeah.
Well, exactly. That's exactly the point. And I bring this up all the time, too. I'm like, how did this baseball team ever lose? With DeSean Jackson and Richard Sherman, you could play with two outfielders, Chris.
Yeah.
They have a fifth infielder, because between those, you have a whole outfield cover. But both these guys wind up...
That is true.
Right? But both these guys wind up choosing football.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if baseball is smart and they're enterprising, they're gonna start looking for the in every other sport, soccer, all these sports.
Is it because they were Compton, right? Weren't they from? Are they from Compton? Where are they?
They were from LA somewhere. I don't know if it was actual Compton, but they're from that area.
Let me see, Richard Sherman. Yeah, because maybe they thought it was. It was.
Cool. But if they were Compton, but if they were from Compton, they might have taken
baseball
more seriously. Yeah. Because there's the MLB had an initiative in Compton. They had an academy, and there's a few Major League Baseball guys in the league right now that came up. Like Aaron Hicks came from that academy. Anthony Goes, who played for the Blue Jays and for the Tigers, was a product of that. Baseball is smart. This is an opportunity. For every sport that doesn't require you to be 7 feet tall. Baseball, soccer, opportunity to start scooping up some of the talent that the NFL has said that, one, we've established we don't care about your health, whether it's concussions, trying to lengthen the season, Thursday night games. We've already said we think you guys are all expendable. And then two, if you're black, and are explicit about caring about black people specifically, we don't want you either.
Okay. Yeah.
Baseball is such a conservative culture, but listen, these sports got to get out of their own way. And start to realize there's a lot of talent out there that the NFL has decided that it doesn't want. So y'all can take it. And if the NFL suffers in the long run, that's the NFL's fault. NFL forgets that they haven't always been the preeminent sport in the United States, and people think that the way things are is the way things have always been and the way they're always going to be, but that's not never been the way it is. And so just like the NFL 50 years ago was behind baseball and horse racing and boxing, it's not impossible for some other sports to overtake the NFL, especially with the NFL is just callous and this careless about cultivating and respecting talent.
Is it the NBA, do you think the NBA is gaining ground?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And think about, like, in the late 70s, when the NBA didn't even show the championships live. They just put them on tape delay, right?
Yeah.
The NFL, the NBA's gained all kinds of ground. Part of it is that, you can sell the players as personalities.
Right,
because you
can
see their faces, and their faces are on the screen all the time. And this is part of when people ask me, like, well, how come the NFL and the NBA react so drastically differently to players demonstrating during the anthem or being outspoken advocates for black rights or outspoken critics of Donald Trump? And a lot of it is that the NFL really only wants to market certain individuals, but the rank and file of players is rather keep these guys nameless, faceless, interchangeable. You're just a robot out here. We can't see your face. You look like a cartoon character. You hit each other, and you don't ever seem to get hurt. That's what we like. But we don't really want people to know who you are or that you're human beings. We want people to think you're machines. Whereas the NBA, like, you can't hide it. There is no hiding. You know, the uniform is small. You see everyone's face. You can see their name. You can't hide the fact that these people are human beings. So the NBA has been smart about it and just said, let's work with it instead of trying to suppress it.
Dude, you know, and that's a great point because, you know, like when you tie in sports media to the actual game and the players, what makes the game more compelling, I found, is that we know who these guys are under those helmets. Yes. And I thought college football did that really well. And I guess they still do it, but it just seems to be so much contradiction that it's just like, well, what the fuck are we doing here? Do you want certain guys to get these commercials? Are you getting mad that a certain guy gets the commercials and gets a lot of publicity, and then that takes away from that doesn't take away anything. We want this guy to do better now that we know who he is. Oh, this guy likes, you know, like sometimes Dan Le Batard. Oh, what's the last movie that made you cry? He'll ask an NFL player, and they'll say like A Walk to Remember. And I'm like, oh shit, that guy likes A Walk to Remember. I like that guy. This guy's my favorite player because he's kind of there's like some small thing of humanity attached to this guy.
Yeah, well, the NFL, and this is another thing I talk about all the time. They don't mind you being a well-rounded human being, as long as you're a well-rounded human being in a way that they can
monetize
the ways they can sell. Mm-hmm. And that often means being a well-rounded human being in ways that don't explicitly call out or fight racism or explicitly advocate for black rights. So, like, you look at a guy like Myron Roll, Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah.
Florida State, you went to Oxford. So, like, when they feel like presenting, hey, guys, these are smart guys, they're not just jocks, hey, look at Myron Roll. But then when Myron Roll does his Rhodes Scholarship and wants to get into the NFL, they're like, oh, well, you're not dedicated enough to football. How do we know you care enough about football? Why are you wasting your time with these Rhodes Scholarships?
Right.
Or, like, again, and I always ask this question, what are Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid doing that's different from what J.J. Watt did?
Well, J.J. Watt's white.
Yes. J.J. Watt donated all this money to Hurricane Harvey victims. That's great. What J.J. Watt is doing is giving back to his community. When the NFL wants to sell you on certain guys, they say, look, the NFL cares. We give back to our community.
Mm-hmm.
What is Colin Kaepernick doing? What is Eric Reid doing besides giving back to their community, getting out here raising money, spending their own money, right?
Right.
To educate kids on their rights, to stop the extrajudicial killing of unarmed black citizens. That's giving back to your community. What is the problem with that? There shouldn't be a problem with that, except the NFL has said, you give back to your community as long as it's not a specifically black initiative, or as long as it's not an initiative that challenges racism.
Right.
But it's no, you're giving back to your community, what's the problem? There is no problem,
right,
except the NFL has chosen to make it one.
And on a wider note, how is Johnny Manziel doing up there?
I haven't really had... I know he played the other week and did okay. Haven't had too many opportunities to watch him.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed was that he... when they wound up signing him, he made like some more realistic contract demands, because when they first signed him, he was like, yeah, I need $500,000 guaranteed for 2 years.
Okay.
Right. And listen, $500,000 in the CFL, you might as well ask for a bazillion kajillion dollars. Sums of money don't exist in the CFL for one player. Are you nuts?
Oh, so that's a lot?
Yeah, in the CFL, that's a ton of money.
Oh, shit, okay.
That is a ton of money in the CFL.
The best player gets how much for a contract? Who's the best?
You'll see guys that make like $250,000, and there's like a salary cap exception for those guys.
Okay.
Look at your man, James Wilder Jr. in Florida State, and he had played with the Bengals for a while. He's on the practice squad. So he winds up in Canada last season playing for the Argos, Toronto Argonauts.
Yeah.
This guy was making, about $56,000 Canadian.
Holy shit.
And it was at the point where over the winter, he wasn't going to come back to Canada, but he was on a two-year contract. And he wants to leave to go to the NFL, but the team was like, no, we picked up your option. You got to come back. And he's like, I can't. $56,000, what am I supposed to do?
Jesus.
It would have been easier for him, and he was seriously contemplating just sitting out the season, letting his contract lapse, getting a regular job, and making more money just at a regular job than in the CFL.
NFL team couldn't buy him out? Buy his contract, though?
Well,
he was not that good.
So basically, he wanted to go back to try the NFL.
Okay.
And it was at the point where he and his agent were like, ooh, man, should I just, like, break this contract and go? try to pay them back some whatever money I'm making in the NFL or whatever it was. He winds up signing an extension. They finally wound up giving him a raise. But, yeah, like, these guys don't make a lot of money at all. There's one or two guys on each team, you know, that can make 200, 250, something like that. But for the most part, they're making regular people money. So Johnny Football's like, give me $500,000 because he thinks that's like a modest demand. The CFL.
I like the mascot looks pretty good. I remember him talking about it. Us talking about this, you just made me think about him. I don't know what team that is.
The Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Okay. That's a pretty cool mascot, I think. Let's see. Johnny Manziel of Hamilton Tiger Cats finished his CFL season on a high note. How many games did they play? I thought they were just...
No, they're just getting started. So they... regular season, I think, starts this weekend.
Okay.
It's an 18-game regular season.
Manziel was... how many games did you say?
18-game regular season.
Oh, shit.
It's a very long regular season, but it's a shorter playoffs because there's only 18 in the league, right?
He was 12 for 20 for 88 yards and a touchdown. And a touchdown. Hamilton Tiger Cats scored 30 straight points to beat the Montreal Alouettes 30-15.
Yeah, that sounds all right.
Preseason, okay.
Yes, exactly. So, you know who he, remember Jeremiah Masoli?
No.
He played at, he was a quarterback. He was at Oregon and at Ole Miss.
Okay.
So he has been the incumbent starting quarterback at Hamilton.
I know who you're talking about. Yes, yes, yes. Got you.
Yeah. And so Johnny Football has kind of bumped him out of the way.
Wow. Is that dude not that good, or is he...
Jeremiah Masoli is a solid CFL quarterback, but, you know, he signed Johnny Football. Johnny Football's got to play. You're not signing Johnny Football when you sit on the bench.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has to play because he sells tickets.
And lastly...
So there he is. Yes.
I want to get your take on this IHOP to IHOP thing. Do you know anything? How do you feel about that?
As I was tweeting this morning, like, remember the Wu-Tang Jodeci Freaking You remix?
Yes.
So you got to change the first line now?
Oh.
You got stacks like the International House of Burgers. It doesn't rhyme.
No, it doesn't.
It does not rhyme.
Does not.
I did see a commercial, and they were talking about unlimited fries and all this. Like, I would have. And the thing is, last time I went to IHOP in Niagara Falls on the Canadian side of the border, like, it wasn't that good. You could tell the pancakes had come from a microwave.
You know, I'm not a big pancake guy, but IHOP. See, this is the thing. I don't know if I'm talking to the right person because you're Canadian. But you spent time, and at the same time, you spent time at Northwestern, where you probably went to Walker Brothers.
Went to Walker Brothers, but there's also an IHOP at like Howard and Western, I want to say, right where Chicago and Evanston and Skokie, where they all meet. So we used to go to IHOP all the time.
Okay, so I mean, you know it, so. Like, I have sentimental value. When I go to IHOP, I get the big steak omelet and toast.
I get the chicken fried steak.
So it's like, I don't even get, and I like IHOP. My thing is, what I have issue with is the Black Twitter elite who seem to be above all of the chain restaurants. I didn't even know they gave people. A shit. I didn't even know they gave a shit. People. Oh, dude, they're out there. Or they maybe it's a performative thing on social media. Gotta like be. they're too good for it. But dude, all the people that are like, oh, I don't care. What are they doing with the changing of the burger? Who gives a fuck? Oh, da, 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 da. But why? I don't have any issue with them doing
who,
it.
Who are these people? Like, now, because the thing is, if you're that stuck up,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, like you've been to college.
Exactly. Right.
But if you've been to college, you've also been at the point where, like, hey, I want to go out, but I don't have a ton of money.
Right.
What am I going to do to make it feel like I'm having an outing? I know. Let's go to IHOP.
Dude, like, I've said this hundreds of times on the show, but you could appreciate this. When I lived in Chicago, I was in grad school, and my second year, we would have class Monday through Thursday, and then Friday we would have off, and we would have no classes. We would just go to rehearsal at like from like 6 to 10. So I worked part time at Best Buy every Friday for a long time. I had to go. My shift was like 6 o'clock to 3:30 or something like that. And I would go to IHOP, big steak omelet, Texas toast, pink lemonade. Yep. The one off of, I guess that would have been Halsted in like kind of like it was in Boys Town, like Boys Town Lakeview area.
Okay, dude. Yeah, I don't know the north side that well.
But dude. It was great. It kept me right through the whole day, man. I love IHOP for that. And every time I go, I like to get that big stink omelet. But now I would try their burgers.
I just know how many people are that were in college, but like also always had money to go to real restaurants, not chain restaurants. Like, hey,
yeah.
Good for you, man. If that's how you lived in college, but for the rest of us. You know, IHOP was a big step up from Burger King or Taco Bell. So, like, when you went, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, fucking elitist. I they'll talk shit about, like, Outback Steakhouse. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? What are you talking about? Like, of course.
There's nothing wrong with any of these places.
No, it's not. It's not.
You just don't have, like, you don't have to pretend
and
that, it's fine dining. You take it for what it is. Who are these people?
I see some form or other of it like once in a while. It's just like, oh, I can't believe you guys eat at that place.
Next thing you tell me, I can't listen to Pusha T because it's drug rap. It's that class A.
Dude.
They tell me I can't listen to Keith Sweat because it's cliche that he's sleazy and begs all the time. Like, damn it, I know Keith Sweat's not Donnie Hathaway. Let me cook.
I was talking to Rod a couple of weeks ago about how like people are trying to find the morality in a rap beef. There's people that I
why would you do that?
I don't Pusha T sells drugs. I don't know why he's mad at Drake. You know, it's like people that I you know, it's just like you can't
but again there. Who are these people? They just found out Pusha T sells drugs. What have you been listening to since 1999?
I think.
What have you listened to since the funeral came out,
dude?
Why is this a surprise to you?
I think people have to. Now that we all have a voice, I think that people have to weigh in, like on everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. So I'm looking at their website and the IHOP website now. It's like, so it's steak burgers. So it's kind of like, I guess they're kind of doing the steak and shake thing, I guess.
Okay. Well, I'm not too good to go to steak and shake either.
I'm not either. Like we used to, they had one in Evanston. I think like Skokie Evanston.
I was gonna say it must not have been near campus.
I've
been living in there.
Yeah, so they got like they've got a mega monster burger, mushroom and Swiss. I'm not like I was talking to friends about this. I'm very alt-right conservative when it comes to burgers. I don't like all like this one burger with like onion rings on it. I'm not. You know, I'll do bacon or something like that.
Yes.
It looks pretty good. It, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the lineup. Like, if they look in real life like they look on the banner photo on the Twitter page, I'd give it a try.
Yeah. I don't.
And I'd eat the pancakes for dessert.
Yeah. I don't. I just don't get it. Just no. You know what? I get it, but it annoys me. It really pisses me off. It's like, you guys, it's just like, go fuck yourselves. Like, stop being, stop it. Because you're not too good for that. You're not too good. Like, granted, if you like, oh, I like to eat healthy, or I'm such, I'm vegetarian. That's a totally different thing. But not when you're like, I don't know, this. That's the one thing that I don't like about Black Twitter, this elitism where they just like, oh, you're better than me because of this. You're probably better than me for other reasons, but not this. Not eating at a chain restaurant.
But if you're better than me, if being better means like I'm too good to go to IHOP, then I don't know if I want to be that good.
Yeah, I want
to. There's all kinds of other places you can't go.
I remember, and every time I talk about women that I've dated, I get in trouble now. But I remember going out with this woman, pretty woman. Not, I remember going out with this lady who said, I don't eat at chain restaurants.
Good for you. Good for you.
And I don't know how it happened, so I'm just going to say we ended up going to IHOP. And she liked it, and she's like, "Oh, can I have some of yours?" But I did let her have some of my
good, yeah, exactly. Omelet,
but of course, what, you know,
because the thing is too, like a lot of times after you go out, like depending on what the outing is,
yeah,
what's open? Like IHOP is always open,
right?
So what are you gonna do? It's after the club, it's 2:33 in the morning, and everyone's hungry, and you're like, "Well, sorry, I can't eat because I don't do chain restaurants."
Yeah, and I think she ended up liking it, and she just, yeah, she was just, I don't know, maybe she was fronting, I don't know what her deal was. I don't remember how that, but I don't think I saw her again, but I did remember the last time I saw her, we were in Blockbuster, and that could tell you how long ago that was.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah, that was at least 10 years ago. But I remember seeing her with another guy. Like, I didn't follow through with that. I didn't really care for it. But anyway, and I just tried to hide from her when I was with some friends and she was with another dude.
Looking, you should have pulled the dude aside and said, "Hey, look, what she really likes are chain restaurants. And yeah. If you can't take her to IHOP, take her to Outback."
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, Morgan, this has been this has been great, man. I always enjoy talking to you. Do you have anything like? Tell people where they can find you and anything cool you got coming up.
Okay, perfect. You can find me on Twitter at Morgan P. Campbell. Same handle on Instagram. In real life, I cover sports for the Toronto Star, and I do a thing there called the Sports Prism. Mm-hmm. So, the Sports Prism is a weekly series. I am the author of the Sports Prism. So basically, we use sports as a prism to understand off-the-field issues, whether it's business, marketing, race, gender, sexism, etc. Or we use those issues to help us understand sport. So that's what I do. So like, last story I did for... So this week I got a marketing story coming up. Last week was about Donald Trump versus the NFL and how... Donald Trump picking this fight with the Philadelphia Eagles lets you know how disingenuous his pardon of Jack Johnson was. Mm-hmm. We've written about Martin Luther King in sports. We've written about Caster Semenya, who's the 800-meter runner from South Africa, who the track and field people want to take drugs to suppress her testosterone, even though it's natural testosterone. We've written about her. Wrote about a world champion boxer. He used to be a pimp. And all of the problematic... gender issues that come into play when he fights, this kind of stuff. That's what I'm doing. If you check like the Sports Prism hashtag on Twitter, you'll see links to these stories. You go to thestar.com/sports, you scroll down, you'll see some of the stories. I'm working on getting these people to give me just my own URL, thestar.com/sportsprism. We're almost there, and once that happens, you'll just be able to go to that page and hover and go down the rabbit hole. That's my goal. But that's where you can find me, the Star, at the Toronto Star. Check the Sports Prism hashtag. You'll see stories I've been doing. Follow me on Twitter at Morgan P. Campbell. Same handle on Instagram.
Man, thanks, man. That was great. Hold on to the line. Yeah, Morgan, thanks so much for doing the show. Really appreciate you.
Anytime, man. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.
Let me know when it hits the internet, man. We'll make this work.
What's that?
I said, let me know when it hits the internet.
Yeah. Well, I'll tag you and everything. It'll probably go up like this weekend.
Okay, perfect. Sounds good.
All right. Hold on a second, man. All right. Take it easy, everybody. All right.